At Farmers, our honesty is contagious.
Wait, am I going to catch honesty?
Well, when you're with Farmers, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, how long does it take to... I lied to you when you asked if I knew what a deductible was. I don't know my dad's birthday, and I thought umbrella policies were for rainstorms. Actual rainstorms. I have it, don't I?
You don't just have honesty.
You have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at Farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on Saturday night on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. July 4th. Hopefully you're having a great holiday. Hopefully you enjoyed the matches today. The two favorites get through. Not a shock in the two games today. Maybe a shock in how the second one went, at least in terms of how close it was. But two big favorites, and they both advance. France needed a penalty from Kylian Mbappe. They didn't really create a ton during the game. We're going to talk about all that here in just a second. Morocco needed a strong second half. They ended up 3-0 over Canada. And now these two are on a collision course. It's a rematch of the 2022 semifinal in Qatar. That'll be Thursday in Boston. The rest of the round of 16 is still loaded. Tomorrow night, Mexico and England at the Estadio Azteca. Before that, Brazil and Norway in New Jersey. The United States and Belgium in Seattle. Spain and Portugal play on Monday. Colombia and Switzerland close us out in Vancouver. And oh yeah, by the way, Argentina and Egypt here in Atlanta on Tuesday at noon. We're going to break all of that down, and we'll finish with the 3-4-3 like we always do. 2 hours of soccer talk here on the station tonight. Let's get into it. France in a sauna in Philadelphia. They win 1-0. This was not the free-flowing France that we have seen in this tournament. They had scored at least 3 goals in every game. They didn't do that today. This was a street fight. France won it anyway. Not everybody agrees on how to feel about it. There are a lot of debates going on your social media platform of choice, and really a lot of it depends on what continent you are coming from. It's very, very interesting how people are reacting to this game. Let's talk about what happened, and we'll talk about the reaction to it. Gustavo Alfaro, the manager for Paraguay, he built his game plan around a back five. Juan Cáceres, Gustavo Velasquez, Gustavo Gomez, Omar Alderete was able to start. Junior Alonso, who, yes, has been linked with a move to Atlanta United. They were behind that midfield screen of Miguel Almirón, Diego Gomez, Andres Cubas, and Matias Galarza. Julio Enciso was technically a forward up top, but he was isolated for most of the game. It worked really well. Look, here's the thing. Again, France had scored 3 goals in every game. They needed a penalty here. France, in the run of play, created 0.64 expected goals. That's not much. They didn't really create much outside of the penalty. The set piece XG was 0.83, and the overwhelming majority of that, depending on your model, usually about 0.76 or 0.78, is from a penalty. So France didn't create an expected goal in the game outside of the penalty. So if you're looking at this from a Paraguayan perspective, that's impressive. Now, Paraguay didn't create much at all, 0.17 in terms of XG, but again, that is to be expected as well. France couldn't find a rhythm. They went more than 20 minutes without a shot. That's only the fourth time since 1966 where they started tracking this stuff that that's happened in a World Cup to France. It's also the third World, just the third World Cup knockout match since 66 with no shots on target in the entire first half. Manu Koné had a deflected shot nearly creep in. Jules Koundé got the first shot in the 36th minute. Adrian Rabiot, he fired well over the bar. Tchouaméni was missing from all of it. He was out with an injury. Assistant Guy Stéphan called it a minor issue, and he could be back for a quarterfinal for France. The physicality of this match, look, it's a real thing. Kylian Mbappe was a clear target all night. Matias Galarza kind of threw an elbow slapped at him. I mean, Mbappe's reaction was absurd because he didn't get hit in the chest, but Mbappe grabbed his chest. Could have easily given Galarza a yellow card for the swipe at him is what it really felt like. Didier Deschamps had to physically step in a couple of times where Mbappe was being surrounded by players. The referee, Ilgis Tantashev from Uzbekistan, he let a lot of it go. Three yellow cards all match. All three went to the French players, Bradley Barcola, Manu Koné, and Michael Olise. Paraguay had no cards. That's the first time that's happened to them in a World Cup match since 1998. They hadn't been to one since 2010, so take that with a little bit of a grain of salt. Something finally had to give in the match because France was banging on the door for a long time. Didier Deschamps brought in Désiré Doué for Barcola in the 61st minute, and almost immediately, Doué, he cut across the top of the 18, drew contact, didn't get a foul on the outside of the 18, and then almost immediately after that, he gets into the 18, he cuts to the right, draws a foul from Diego Gomez. Tantashev, the referee, did not call it in real time. The VAR sent him to the monitor. It's a penalty. Absolutely. Like, I do think Doué was looking for the penalty, but it's a penalty. You can absolutely justify the call. I have no problem with it being made. Mbappe steps up after a whole bunch of shenanigans and converts in the 70th minute. Orlando Hill went the other way. Mbappe gets the goal. He is now level in the golden boot race with Lionel Messi. He is still behind Messi in the overall career World Cup tally, but he's going to pass him soon enough. This is Mbappe's 19th goal. He's one behind Messi in the all-time career race. 11th career World Cup knockout goal. That's three more than anybody else in the tournament's history. That was actually France's 150th World Cup goal of all time, fourth most of everybody. Couple other numbers that jump out to you here. Paraguay, they completed just 54% of their passes because most of them weren't passes. They were just clearances to get it as far away from their own goal as possible. That's one of the two lowest team passing accuracies in a World Cup since 1966. Paraguay's group stage match against Turkey was actually lower. Mike Maignan, he came up big late. Orlando Hill, he came up big late as well, denying Mbappe twice in stoppage time. To keep the lifeline open for Paraguay as long as they possibly can. Now, here's where things got interesting, and we'll probably continue the conversation over into the next segment. Mbappe was asked afterwards as he was leaving the field for the TV post-game interview about the physical nature of the match, and he said, translated into English, if we have to get our hands dirty, we'll get our hands dirty. Excuse the expression. We have no problem with that. He said France showed that they're not just a flashy attacking team. They are able to be a little nasty when they need to be. Ryan Cherki, he picked right up where that left off, joking that he wouldn't limit it to hand, said France dives in fully. Interesting choice of words. And holds nothing back. He talked about the refereeing. He said, I didn't know you could commit around 30 fouls without being penalized once. It doesn't matter because we won. A lot of talk about the referee. In Europe, people didn't like the referee. In South America, people were fine with the referee. Didier Deschamps. He talked about how it's hard to rile up Michael Olise, but he got riled up. He talked about having to sub Mbappe against Uruguay back in 2018 because of this kind of behavior, trying to provoke him, maybe trying to draw a little bit bigger line there about South American football. But you got to remember, Kylian Mbappe has said some very negative things about South American football. And that's part of the undercurrent here. And this has to be understood because there are a lot of people getting into their morals about this performance and about this game. There are a lot of people saying some things that are stretching the bounds here. And it's getting interesting because I'm curious to see what the reaction is going to be around the United States. Because we're kind of in the middle of it here, in between these two. CONMEBOL has one way of looking at the game and looking at a game like this. UEFA and Europe has a very different way at times, although I also think there's a lot of hypocritical talk that comes out of Europe in this case, just like there's hypocritical talk that comes out of South America. Don't get me wrong, but I think in this specifically, there's a lot of talk about, I mean, the word thug has been thrown around really easily by some people. And I think they're just trying to say that Paraguay was being physical. I don't think there is any additional connotation to it. I know that can be a loaded word in some circles, but that's not really where this is going. It's just the fact that there is this is the wrong way to play idea. But I want to go back to maybe one reason why, outside of he's the best player on the field, Kylian Mbappe is maybe a little bit of a target in this game. In 2022, he said that European qualifiers are, quote, much harder, unquote, because of the competitive level. He claimed that South America doesn't have the same level of difficulty. Lionel Messi pushed back on that. Chichi, the Brazilian manager at the time, pushed back on that. It was a silly statement because CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying is so much more difficult than UEFA World Cup qualifying. The styles of play, like what we saw from Paraguay, show part of this. And you have to understand that. And again, there are many ways to play this game. They're not all going to be your favorite. And that's fine. I've talked about this for a long time about I don't enjoy teams that don't want the ball. I don't enjoy teams that sit back and bunker. I don't enjoy teams that only try to press and don't try to have the ball and don't try to make anything happen in possession. That's the kind of soccer I enjoy. I'm going to be honest about that, but I'm also not going to be sanctimonious about it in the sense of saying like, well, if you don't play the soccer that I enjoy, then you're wrong. No. In this case, Paraguay, and we will continue this into the next segment, Paraguay is not as talented as France. And I'm not being disrespectful by saying that. That's a fact. Paraguay started this tournament badly with a bad loss to the United States. They were able to regroup and have a great tournament. They knocked out Germany. They got to the knockout round just to begin with was huge. They knew who they were. And we talked about this after the Germany game. They could not play an open game. If they had tried to play the exact same way that France played, they would have gotten blown out. And you guys know how this goes. If you get blown out, we're not going to be sitting here saying, oh, but they tried to play. Yay, that's really good for them. No, everybody would be saying the coach was foolish. So we're going to get more into the feelings about this game, because there are a lot of things being said on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean. We'll get into that. We'll get into Morocco and their win over Canada, and we will get into what's coming up for the rest of the round of 16. More Atlanta soccer tonight to come on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
At Farmers, our honesty is contagious.
Wait, am I going to catch honesty?
Well, when you're with Farmers, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, how long does it take to... I lied to you when you asked if I knew what a deductible was. I don't know my dad's birthday, and I thought umbrella policies were for rainstorms, actual rainstorms. I have it, don't I?
You don't just have honesty.
You have Farmers. Bum, ba, bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Into the back of the net! Goal!
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. We're talking World Cup. We're talking round of 16. We're talking some controversy. You get to the stage of the World Cup, you're going to have controversy. And there are some people who are upset about Paraguay's approach in their 1-0 loss to France. I don't think they had another choice if they wanted to try to win the game, which is all that matters here. Once you get to the knockouts of a World Cup, you're not trying to put on a show. You're not playing a video game. You're trying to win. And Paraguay could not play France straight up. They don't have the same level of talent. They went for it in the way that they could go for it. And look, they took France all the way down to a VAR-induced penalty. Gustavo Alfaro, the manager for Paraguay, he said if it wasn't for that penalty, they would not have beaten us. That's why they celebrated the way they did. That's why they ended up wasting time at the end. They know what it cost them. Interesting. Sergio Goycochea, the Argentine former national team goalkeeper who does media in Argentina and South America, he took a shot at Mbappe after the game and said that the showboating and cocky attitude while already winning is exactly what invites a physical response, which is not wrong. I think some of what Mbappe had said coming into it maybe was part of this, and just the fact that you had to try to get under his skin. Full credit to Mbappe for not letting it get under his skin. And again, this goes to another hypocritical kind of thing. Mbappe talked some trash about the way that Paraguay chose to play, which is silly because of some of the things that Mbappe has said about South American football and just in general. And then he acted out after some of this happened. But you can't do the behavior and then act out when somebody showboats and what have you. That's what happens in these games. And I think we get a little too caught up in trying to appeal to the moral side of it when it's a game and somebody's got to win and somebody's got to lose. For me, the read on this game is it's a clash of culture. Paraguay competed as hard as they possibly could and as well as they possibly could. Olise, Dembele didn't do anything in this game. Mbappe didn't do much. That's impressive. France put three goals past Senegal, past Iraq, past Norway, and past Sweden. Sweden in the last round thought they could play straight up with France. Sweden has a good attack, a much better attack than Paraguay. Sweden had one big chance. France had seven. in this game tonight, France had one big chance. You have to give Paraguay credit for that. And yes, the physicality is part of it. I think at times we get too hung up on air quotes sportsmanship, whistle to whistle. It's not a youth game. It's not, I mean, Charles Barkley said it best a long time ago. People are making him a role model. He's not going out to try to be a role model. I don't think any of the Paraguayan players are out trying to be a role model here. They're trying to win, and they know they're outmatched. I don't have a problem with it. I think the referee probably should have went card at least a couple of times on Paraguayan players to try to get it under control a little bit more. I don't know if it would have changed it, to be perfectly honest. But once he opened the door for cards on the other side of it, giving three to France, yeah, that's a valid thing to talk about. I think that probably should not have been the case. Three cards to France, none to Paraguay, with the way the game played out. I don't think there was anything that was a red card from Paraguay, though. There's no red cards in it. The last sequence of the game where Mbappe was laughing in Paraguayan players' faces, there'd been a lot of talk back and forth. Mbappe was caught saying something that I can't repeat in Spanish, which, you know, you're saying that to Junior Alonso. There were things said to Mbappe. Like, this is all part of it. But after the final whistle, and this is where I will get into sportsmanship and dignity a little bit, because here's two things that happened. And this is why I do have a bit of an issue with Kylian Mbappe talking trash about Paraguay's approach. Going into one of the hydration breaks, it was the one where there was a bit of a pull apart. Mbappe is running towards his own bench and intentionally runs into a Paraguayan player. Now, then the player kind of flops and it becomes more than it was. But I mean, he runs into him on purpose. Like, that's provocation. Okay. And if he had already been provoked and wanted to fight fire with fire, well, he did. So don't complain about it. And two, after the final whistle, game over, the Paraguayan goalkeeper, Orlando Gil, who was named player of the game, reaches out to shake Mbappe's hand, and Mbappe ignores him and starts yelling and celebrating, not quite in his face, but pretty close to it. And then he'll kind of lightly toss the ball at Mbappe's back. It's that stuff that I have more of a problem with than the stuff in the match. Someone from Bleacher Report called Paraguay's performance despicable and embarrassing. I would absolutely push back on that. And South American reporters and fans are not happy about that. I think that misunderstands the sport entirely. Paraguay was not going to go out there and play the same formation and play the same way as France, because they would have been blown out. Gustavo Alfaro is pulling players from Dinamo Moscow, from Cerro Porteño, from MLS. And France has a second team that has most of its players playing in the Champions League and on League Champions. There's more talent in the French team, so you can't play them the same way. They only got you on a penalty. That's it. So what Paraguay did in this tournament, no matter if you like the style or not, and I don't love the style, but I love how they competed. It was gritty. It was smart coaching with a limited roster. I do not feel like it was embarrassing. I do not feel like it was despicable. I think that's way too far. And again, I will see these kinds of things out of European media, who will then not say anything when one of their own players dives. Yes, this happens in England. Yes, this happens in France. Yes, this happens in Spain. It happens in Italy. It happens in Germany. Jurgen Klinsmann was very talented at diving. But they would get very, again, kind of uppity about it. You can't pick and choose. So to me, this match was two teams that were in different classes. Paraguay was able to bring the match to their level, and France was able to find a way to win it. Good on them. Good on them. Absolutely. Full credit. And trying to compare Paraguay, as I've seen some people do, with Cabo Verde, those are two completely different things. Cabo Verde has more attacking talent than Paraguay, flat out. So they could attack more, even though they were defensive. They didn't have to go to some of the other ways to try to compete, provoking some physical contact, things like that. Cabo Verde didn't have to do that. They could compete. Now, they had to find a way to compete on their terms, and they did really well with that against Argentina and took that to extra time. But different teams are different teams, and they have to have different approaches. So there's going to be more said about Paraguay, I am sure, and I think there's going to be a lot of people who misunderstand it. And I think probably some of this is going to carry over into Mexico and England tomorrow, because Mexico can absolutely play in the way that Paraguay did tonight. Now, they're going to be at home. I don't think they're going to be nearly as defensive. But could Mexico potentially try to get under England's skin? Yes. Because a lot of the European players do not play in these kinds of matches, and it can affect them. And we've seen it at every World Cup since the beginning of time. This one is no exception. All right, the other game today, Morocco 3-0 winners over Canada. It wasn't comfortable for Morocco. The first half had more yellow cards than shots. Canada was able to be very disruptive to Morocco, and Canada was also very provocative at times and very physical at times. But Morocco was able to stay true to their identity and find a way to break this game open. He did it in the 50th minute. Achraf Hakimi won a free kick. Soufiane Rahimi was fouled, and then Hakimi, what a free kick. Looks like he's going to curl it into the box. Doesn't. Plays it to the top of the 18, and it's a great finish from Unani, who puts it into the back of the net low first time. Great goal from him. And Morocco gets the lead. And then that's where the game is going to change, because Canada then has to try to play a little bit more, and they just can't. They can't compete at this level. The second goal came in the 82nd minute. Brahim Diaz drove into the box from the right, cut it back. Unahi finished it. He was your player of the match with two goals. Canada controlled the game in the way it was played for about 45 minutes. Morocco was the better team in the other 45, though. Just much better. Unahi is 26 years old. He's got 54 caps. He was discovered in Casablanca around age 10 by a former Moroccan technical director, went to Strasbourg, and it took him a while to break through. He ended up at Marseille in January of 2023, went to Girona, and he's a guy who's never really nailed down a starting role at the club level, but with the national team, he becomes a different player, and he really fits with this group. Morocco, I said coming into the tournament, had to make the quarterfinal to really establish themselves as one of the top teams in the world. Because if you have one tournament that goes well and then you disappear, you're not one of the top teams. Morocco has become that team. They got to the quarterfinal. That was where the bar was for me. You get to the quarterfinals and back-to-back tournaments, you're a top team. Morocco's in that class, no question. Canada's not. And Jesse Marsh said something kind of, said a few things that were kind of crazy after the game. Said that Canada was the better team, which, no, that's not true. Called it one team on the pitch in the first 45 minutes. No, it was pretty even. Canada might have been slightly better. They did control the game in terms of limiting Morocco, but that's stretching a little bit. I get it. I get defending your players, and I get like propping up your program. I get that. But to say like he did, as strongly as he tried to say it, that Canada was the better team when they lost 3-0, how do you do that with a straight face? He said, I'd rather be us than them. How? You're going home. They're going to a quarterfinal for the second straight World Cup. How would you ever say, I'd rather be us than them? I can't take you seriously when you say that. I get the idea of trying to, again, big up your program, talk it up, give your players warm feelings after, give your media. I get all of that, but you can do it in a much better way than to say you are the better team and I'd rather be us than them in a post-game interview, because I can't take you seriously anymore when you say that about a program like Morocco and your Canada, who had a favorable draw because you were a co-host and you still didn't win your group, even though you were the seeded team and you had a chance to do that on home soil. And you got through in the round of 32 against a team that was a surprise to be there, but you won late. And then you lost 3-0 in the round of 16. Take your lumps, go home, build up for the next time where you're going to have to qualify, and then let's talk. Don't say I'd rather be us than them when you lose 3-0, because you sound unserious. Jesse Marsh has got a little bit of a habit of doing that, and I wish he would just stop talking, because what he did as a coach, very impressive, with a team that is in a very similar way to Paraguay, not as talented. He did not compete for as long as Paraguay did today, but he found a system that suited what he had, and he got the most that he could out of the talent that he had. That's good coaching. Bad PR, good coaching on the Jesse Marsh side of things. Coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about this quarterfinal that's coming up on Thursday. France and Morocco meeting again. They were in the semifinals in 22. They're in the quarterfinals here. We'll talk about it coming up. More Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
At Farmers, our honesty is contagious.
Wait, am I going to catch honesty?
Well, when you're with Farmers, it's kind of inevitable.
Well, how long does it take to... I lied to you when you asked if I knew what a deductible was. I don't know my dad's birthday, and I thought umbrella policies were for rainstorms. Actual rainstorms. I have it, don't I?
You don't just have honesty.
You have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Soccer on the world stage, and Jason Longshore has it all covered.
With Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back. More Atlanta Soccer Tonight as we're into the round of 16 in the 2026 World Cup. So many different storylines, and it's a big one coming up on Thursday now that we know what the first quarterfinal is going to look like. Morocco and France. Look, you've got a very close friendship between Achraf Hakimi and Kylian Mbappe from their time together at PSG. Mbappe, in his on-field interview, said that Hakimi probably had already texted him. Probably did. We've seen Mbappe in the stands supporting Morocco during AFCON and wearing a Morocco jersey, if I'm not mistaken. It's going to be a fun little subplot there. But I think the bigger one is kind of Morocco's case here to be one of these top teams. It's their second straight quarterfinal. Their combined four knockout wins across the last two World Cups now equal every other African nation's combined total. One more win ties the 2022 semifinal run. They were the first African nation to ever reach a World Cup semifinal. Awabi, the manager, his message to the group has been really consistent. You've got to suffer as part of this. They haven't changed who they are when they have suffered in games. And that's a credit to, I think, just the understanding of who this team is. And they've evolved since 2022. I still think it was a mistake to move on from Wale Regragui, but the new manager has not, he hasn't made anything worse. And I think he's trying to evolve it a little bit. And maybe Regragui had started the process, but they're more of a possession team and less of a purely defend and counter team. They can control games a little bit more. I think that honestly helped them today against Canada in a game where you were playing a team that was defending and counter-pressing and defending and pressing in a different way. You had to be better with the ball. You had to be more sure of yourselves with the ball. And Morocco was able to do that. They have evolved. And that's a key. If you want to get to this next level, and we've had this conversation about the United States, we've had this conversation about Japan, South Korea, teams that are constantly getting to the round of 16 and not further. How do you get further? I think you have to be good with the ball. Paraguay, prime example. They're limited. They know they're limited. But to get past these kinds of games, you have to be able to go win it. I really believe that at the World Cup level. I think at the club team level, you can be a defend team, a defend first team, and have more success. In knockout games, and I think in MLS, by the way, I think in leagues that have playoffs, so Liga MX, MLS, the top flight in Argentina, other leagues that have playoffs, I think you have to be able to go win a game. That's different than being able to not lose a game. Morocco is advancing, and that's impressive. The U.S., I think, is advancing in this. Japan, not yet. South Korea, they took a big step back. Mexico, advancing. We'll talk about them a little bit more as we get ready for that match with England. You're just, at this stage of the tournament, you can't just defend often and get through. You get upsets. Paraguay getting past Germany was an upset. Paraguay being as difficult as they were for France was a surprise. But you have to be able to go win the game. That's why Cabo Verde, I think, maybe for some people who aren't thinking about it to that depth, it's not saying it's smart. I'm just saying it's maybe overthinking it. Cabo Verde showed that they could go win a game. Now, they did not in this tournament. They didn't lose in 90 minutes, but they didn't win in 90 minutes either. But they scored goals when they had to score goals. And I think that's the difference between what we saw from Japan, what we saw from Paraguay. You have to be able to go do that. And Morocco is getting better in that regard, as is the United States, as is Mexico, and some others that are advancing. One question for France is Aurélien Tchouaméni. He did not play today. Guy Steffen, the manager or assistant manager for France, said that he might return. It's not guaranteed because there's, you know, a short turnaround to Thursday. For Morocco, Saibari, he went out injured in the first half today. Is he going to be able to come back? Rahimi coming off the bench and scoring is important if Saibari can't go on Thursday. Michael Olise, he is now one yellow card away from a suspension risk before the final. There is a reset, so I think he's got to be careful in this one, and then it resets. But here's the thing. You saw something different from France today. You saw something different from Argentina in their win over Cabo Verde. Two teams that had been the best two in this tournament in terms of winning games comfortably and not being tested. Mexico's kind of in that category as well, and they are about to get a big test. The U.S., now they lost a game, but tournament was already sealed up by that point, winning the group. So you throw that result out. Now they got tested in a little bit different way in the round of 32, and they passed it. France passed it. Argentina passed it. You've got to be able to win ugly. You have to win a World Cup. There's going to be a game somewhere along the way. For Argentina, they had a few of them in 2022. They lost the opener to Saudi Arabia. They lost a 2-0 lead to the Netherlands in the quarterfinals. They lost a 2-0 lead in the final. They had to be gritty and get through these games. France hadn't been in that situation, and I wondered if they could. They did today. And this is where I have a problem again with the kind of a little bit of lying to yourself about things in terms of, well, we didn't do this, but they did, and that kind of nonsense. That's a lot of finger pointing, and it's silly. That's a lot of hypocritical behavior. I like that France showed an edge. I like that France defended the dictator, Kylian Mbappe. I like that they showed a different personality when they needed to show it. That makes me feel better about them making a long run in this tournament, because it's very possible that they're going to be tested again, maybe in that quarterfinal against Morocco. You have to be able to win in different ways. It's very rare that you can blow everybody out in 7 games in previous World Cups, 8 now. I think we're at the point now where there is nobody who has purely done that with the exception of Mexico. It's just so difficult to do in a tournament like this. France is the favorite, in my opinion. They have the least amount of flaws. They're not an overwhelming favorite. Spain is getting better. They get Portugal in the round of 16. Colombia, one to watch. They've been good. Argentina, obviously, until somebody beats them, they're a team to beat. England has questions. Mexico has questions. The U.S. has questions. But France has been the best team. And I think they showed that today in a different way. Can Morocco do something different against this team? Can Morocco test France in a different way? I think when you look at Morocco and how they could do that, you have to look at Achraf Hakimi, number one. Right back, who is an attacker like a right winger, but is a good defender as well. He's going to be the one who provides a lot of that impetus for this team. He always does. But he's got help around him now, and I think that's important. Brahim Diaz is a big one. Diaz needs to get a little more involved. I would like to see him get more. He had an assist today. Not a ton of huge chances, and he only had 19 passes on the day. They didn't find him a ton. Would have liked to have seen more. He has the ability to be that guy. Unahi, the guy who had 2 goals, the 26-year-old up top, he is showing that he can be somebody who is counted on. Morocco has players that are not quite at the level of France, but they have enough to compete. The question will be how they decide to do it. You look at this France team and just how good they can be with what they can throw at you, with Mbappe, with Dembele, with Barcola. And Ryan Cherki can't hardly get into the team right now. Olise has been, maybe up to today, the best player in the tournament without scoring a goal. The holding midfield, you know, with no Tchouaméni, Kone was absolutely fine today. Rabiot is absolutely one of the better central midfielders in the tournament. Upamecano and Saliba, two of the best center backs you can get. Koundé can tuck in and be that extra help when he needs to be. He can also get forward as a right back. Digne on the left, same. This team is loaded. Only 11 guys are on the field at one time, though. Morocco can't go 26 for 26 with France. But can they go 11 for 11? They can come close. It's going to be a fun one. They're going to be looking for revenge, Morocco, on Thursday. The rest of this round of 16, man, starting tomorrow, things start to get crazy. Brazil and Norway in the afternoon, Mexico and England in the evening. And yes, it will be in the evening, no matter what misleading press reports you saw yesterday. Monday, Portugal and Spain in the afternoon, USA, Belgium in the evening. Then Tuesday, Argentina and Egypt here in Atlanta at noon, and then Colombia and Switzerland later. That takes you through the rest of the round of 16. Then we actually get a day off on Wednesday. No games on Wednesday. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. It will be the weirdest day because we have had nonstop World Cup soccer since June 11th. July 8th, we're not going to have a match. It's absurd. And then we go into the quarterfinals. I mean, everything is ramping up now. I still feel like there is a moat around the top four teams. France, England at the back end, France at the top, Argentina would be second for me, and Spain would be third. That's my top four. They could be your four semifinalists. It seems like usually every year there is a surprise semifinalist. Very rarely a surprise finalist, but every year it seems like you get a surprise semifinalist. We'll see if we get that this time around with the United States, with Mexico, with Morocco, Colombia. Plenty of teams who could be that surprise. Plenty. I feel like this has been the best World Cup of all time, and we're not even through the round of 16 yet. I know there's an additional knockout round, but still, to be this really early in the business end of the tournament and to have it be as good as it has been, and now we're getting into the games like today that have some friction, that have some edge, that have some grittiness, that have some bad feelings about them. Now we're getting into that portion of the tournament. Whew. It's been a lot of fun, and I think it's about to get... I push back on Madison Cruz saying it's been, or it's going to be fun a lot. Fun can be defined in different ways. Today for France was not fun. I enjoyed the match, though. I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed the friction. I enjoyed some of the back and forth. It wasn't fun, though. I think maybe the fun portion of the tournament is over. Now it's different. It's still super enjoyable, though. But yeah, now we're having some different conversations about this tournament and who can win it, who's going to win the Golden Boot, who's going to be the best player, all these different things that all feel like they're kind of up for grabs. Going to be fun to see how this plays out. On the other side of the break, we'll start talking about how it plays out tomorrow night. Mexico, England, the Estadio Azteca. A total toss-up of a match. We'll try to make some sense of it when we come back on Atlanta Soccer tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Now back to our look at the world of soccer.
And Jason Longshore has it all covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Atlanta Soccer Tonight, July 4th edition. Would have been interesting if the U.S. men's national team had landed in a round of 16 game on July 4th. It's happened before, back in 1994 against Brazil, a game that the U.S. lost 1-0 to the eventual champions and made them work for it. Had to sit back and defend a lot in that game. Had a couple of chances. Also played 11v10 for a long period of time after one of the nastiest, I think, accidental. It's not even a foul. I mean, Leonardo of Brazil was being kind of grabbed from behind by Tab Ramos, and Leonardo swings his elbow, I think, to try to create space. I don't think he's throwing his elbow at Ramos's head, but he caught him and cracked his skull. And Brazil played with 10 for most of that match, and they still were able to find a way to win 1-0. They went on to win that World Cup. That was July 4th, 1994. July 4th, 2026, we had a comprehensive win from Morocco against Canada, and we had a very contentious win for France, 1-0 over Paraguay. A couple more things have come out about both of those games. I wanted to hit on Alphonso Davies's quote. He did not play today. He said after the game to One Soccer in Canada, "I felt a little bit of something in training. Jesse asked if I feel 100%, and I told him no, to be honest. I don't want to be a burden on the team or on the pitch, not giving my all, but it's an injury where you can't take any risk." That's a tough one to hear, in my opinion, because this is a World Cup round of 16 for the first time in Canadian soccer history. I understand being careful, and I understand that Alphonso Davies has to manage his career for himself. I get all that. But this was the biggest game that a Canadian national team had ever played. And I don't know how close to 100% he was. That would be maybe the more important part here. Marsh talked about it, said they did an MRI and saw that there wasn't an injury. And that's the way Marsh put it, which I probably would not have just to protect the player, but that's a whole nother topic. Because hearing that and hearing Davies' comments, I got questions. And I'm never one to tell a player to play when they're hurt. But in this case, man, it's a tough one, because let's say he goes for it. And let's say, especially off the bench. All right, you don't start him, but he comes off the bench when the game starts to turn against Canada. And he's able to provide that threat and maybe that little bit of counterbalance against Achraf Hakimi. And let's say he aggravates the injury. Okay. The Bundesliga season with Bayern Munich doesn't start anytime soon. He might miss a little bit of time in preseason, for sure. But man, it's the World Cup. And it's the biggest game that your national team has ever played. And a lot of Canadian fans are very upset about this. I mean, and he's your captain. There has been some messy situations with Davies' injury and how Bayern Munich has felt about it and how the Canadian program has felt about it. That has been in the background. But I got a feeling there's going to be more of this. I got a feeling there's going to be a lot more about this. I do not think this is the end of the Alphonso Davies portion of it. The other thing I wanted to share quickly before we move into Mexico and England is we are starting to get some comments out of Gustavo Alfaro's press conference from after the game. I mean, he might still be talking at this point. I don't know. These are some quotes shared by Diario Olé out of Argentina. They're also in other countries in South America. He said, "I hope all of this settles to the benefit of the players and Paraguay," talking about the run in the World Cup. Talking about Matias Galarza, he said, "Galarza couldn't play in River. Let me clarify. He can play against Germany and France. He can play on any team in the world." And we had a little bit of a conversation about it in the chat on YouTube. The way the loan was structured with Galarza to come to Atlanta was so he could play, because River was not going to play him. Alfaro knew how important he could be for Paraguay. He needed to play games in the first half of the calendar year in 2026. Atlanta United gave that to him. The purchase option in the loan, I know there were some reports about an automatic trigger for the purchase option. I do not believe that was the case. That is unsubstantiated reporting. I always tell people, be very careful about sourcing and just believing anybody on the internet. I didn't hear anything about any automatic triggers. So with Galarza specifically, and Chris Henderson and Tata Martino have both talked about this, the purchase option in the loan agreement was extremely high. It would have made him a designated player, which right now you don't have a designated player spot. And two, I don't think he's a designated player in Major League Soccer. I agree with Alfaro. He can play on a whole lot of teams in the world, but at the right kind of salary. That's the important element here. So I know there was some talk and some reporting about what could be next for Galarza, and you know, is the team negotiating? I don't know if they're negotiating or not. The original loan, the purchase attached to that, was never going to happen, and it was written so that wouldn't happen. Because River took a gamble that he would, after they paid for his transfer, he comes in, they don't like him, they don't play him, but they want to get something out of a return on him. So they send him on loan, and they're gambling that he does well, and he does well at the World Cup, and then his price goes up, and then they can sell him. And there's already been some talk about European interest. So we shall see. Matias Galarza praised by Gustavo Alfaro, also the goalkeeper, El Flaco, heel, the skinny one. He hasn't been paid in a long time. He's at San Lorenzo. He's a goalkeeper I would like to see make his way to Major League Soccer for sure. Just a lot of praise for his players from Gustavo Alfaro after Paraguay fought literally and figuratively France and could not find a way through. Just very interesting to see the different reactions. And my social media covers the globe, so I will get a Paraguayan media outlet talking about Mbappe being a bad winner for not shaking the hand of the goalkeeper heel. And then you get L'Equipe, and they talk about how bad the referee was. So, I mean, according to the French outlet, Paraguay committed 13 fouls and made 29 tackles, but none of their players committed a yellow card. 13 fouls really isn't that many. I do think that there were a couple that Paraguay should have gotten a yellow card on, and I do think maybe one of the three for France probably shouldn't have gotten a yellow card. The yellow card should have been equal, but it's so funny to see how people react from different cultures about games like this one. France wins 1-0 on the day. Tomorrow night is going to be another one of these games that people are going to have opinions. And it's a really evenly matched one. I do not know which way to turn on it with England and Mexico. Opta has England at a 40.6% chance to win it in normal time. Mexico at 31.5%. Draw at 27.9%. The stadium has some ghosts to it. One of them for England is Diego Maradona. The hand of God happened in that stadium in the quarterfinals in 1986. And then the gol del siglo, the goal of the century, that happened a few minutes later in that match. England's tournament ended at the Azteca in 86. Mexico has lost two competitive matches at the Estadio Azteca. They've never lost a World Cup match at the Azteca. 8 wins, 2 draws before this tournament. This is a tough place to go in and get a result. A very difficult place to go in and get a result. This is only the second time this century that a host nation has won its first 4 matches. Germany did that in 2006. A clean sheet here would be their 5th straight for Mexico. Only team that's ever done that in their first 5 matches in a tournament is Italy in 1990. Now, the altitude is going to be a factor for England. There's just no way around it. It is over a mile high above sea level. It is a very difficult place to play, even taking the altitude out of it, because the stadium is so tall and so loud and holds in noise so much. It has been renovated a few times over the years. I don't think it is quite as intimidating as it used to be, but it's still so difficult to go in there and get a result. I mean, you've watched games from the stadium during this tournament. When Mexico scores, the cameras can't stay still. They're shaking because the stadium is shaking. You have extra security that has been doubled around the fan zones. 2 people died during street celebrations following the win over Ecuador. There were about 1 million people who went into the streets to celebrate. 17,000 police officers are being deployed for this match. The crowd at the Angel de la Independencia Monument has been capped at 25,000. There are more screens around the city, more than 50 public screens for people who can't get into the stadium for it. England reportedly was trying to keep their hotel under wraps. Well, people found it. Fans found it pretty fast. They greeted the bus with boos and with chants. I don't know if there are fireworks going off outside of the hotel in Mexico City tonight. I would imagine there are. I would imagine there are car horns. I would imagine there are any amplified noise that can be made is happening outside of that stadium or outside of that hotel tonight. When we actually get into the players on the field, and we'll continue this in the next segment, Julián Quiñones versus whoever's on the right side defensively for England. I think that's the matchup that's going to decide it. We'll see if Kwanzaa is able to go here in this match, because that right side has been a challenge for England. You've had a number of injuries. You have had to rotate Reece James. He's still being talked about as questionable, but he's not training with the team, so I can't imagine that he is able to go. Jarrell Kwanzaa is back to full availability. Declan Rice, we saw move into that right back position in the game against DR Congo and helped spark the team going forward. This is a tricky one for Thomas Tuchel in the sense of what he does there, because Quiñones isn't exactly the left winger for Mexico. He kind of plays as a second forward. He's very free in the way that Mexico plays, but he's going to be coming in from the left quite a bit. And England's going to have to find a way to shut that down, because I think Quiñones is the most dangerous player that Mexico has. You look at how England started against DR Congo with Noni Madueke as the right winger and Jed Spence as the right back. The goal for DR Congo came from that side. I think Quiñones is a more dangerous player than Sipingo for DR Congo. That's going to be a problem. Elliot Anderson has to be locked in defensively. I think he's the one who got lost in that whole situation that ended up leading to the goal. This is going to be the toughest opponent that England has played in this tournament because of the setting, because of the quality, and because of the altitude, and because of all of it. Can England find a way to go into the Estadio Azteca and get a historic win for them and maybe put some of those ghosts from 86 to bed? Can Mexico keep going on in this tournament, which would be a wild ride for everybody concerned? We're going to find out tomorrow night. It starts at 8 o'clock. We'll talk more about that. We'll talk more about the rest of the round of 16. More to come on Atlanta Soccer tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Into the back of the net! Goal!
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Welcome back. Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Hopefully you're enjoying your July 4th, maybe heading home from fireworks, maybe going out. Enjoy it. It's been a very interesting day on the soccer pitch. We've talked about the various takes from around the world about France and Paraguay. France, many people are calling the way Paraguay played anti-football. A lot of the South Americans are looking at this like, have you seen a Copa Libertadores match? Have you seen a CONMEBOL World Cup qualifier? And they're different worlds. You know, you look at how a lot of the European teams have to qualify for a World Cup, and they don't play games like Paraguay has to play. And bad teams don't find ways to compete with good teams. I think qualifying out of UEFA is much easier than qualifying out of South America, because of these kinds of games, because teams are not afraid to make a game a little ugly. Yeah, employ some of the dark arts. It is an acquired taste, but I don't think it's wrong. I think it is what it is. It's an approach. And if you're Paraguay playing France, your job, if you're Gustavo Alfaro, if you're the players on the field, is to find a way to win. You don't have the same level of talent. You got to find a way. they did really well in trying to find a way. France only created one big chance. They won on a penalty. You have to give Paraguay credit, in my opinion. And the issues that you might have, like the idea of anti-football, I dismiss that out of hand. If you want to get into some of the extracurriculars on the field, absolutely, we can have that conversation, but you have to have it both ways, because it did go both ways. And Kylian Mbappe was involved on both sides of it. He was a target, and he was also a one who provoked. He was. So, like, again, I give Kylian Mbappe some credit for being one who provoked, rather than just losing his head because he was being provoked. He gave it back. Just don't try to throw the other, don't give shade to the other side when you're doing some of the same things. That's all. Mexico and England, we're going to see some of this. It's going to be such a fascinating game tomorrow night. Mark Gahey from England says that Mexico's the favorite. I don't know if you can necessarily say that with the talent that England has. I think Mexico absolutely has a chance to win this match. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know if I would call them the favorite. Opta does not call Mexico the favorite. Javier Aguirre, he has talked about what his team needs to do. He said England is a top team in the world. Mexico needs a near perfect match and a bit of luck to get through. He talked about Raul Jimenez and just his character and just coming back from the injuries that he's had and being the key figure up front for this group alongside Julian Quiñones. He talked about, you know, the plan for trying to contain Harry Kane. It's a collective defensive effort. It's not one guy. He also praised his 17-year-old Gilberto Mora, a generational talent who can play anywhere in the world. And he just kind of pushed off all the other stuff. The talk about England worried about spying, and that's why they stayed in Kansas City an extra day. Like, worried about the hotel, worried about the game time possibly changing, worried about the altitude. He just pushed it off to the side. Alan Shearer, the English legend, he works for the BBC. He said he expects Mexico's fans to make up as much as 80% of the crowd. I think he might be underselling that a bit. He picks England to win if they play the match and not the occasion. Fair enough. I think it's a toss-up. I really think it is. It's going to be a fascinating match. The match before that is also interesting. Brazil and Norway, 4 o'clock from MetLife Stadium. Brazil's the favorite. They have more of a pedigree here. Norway has just as much in the attack as Brazil, but I think a little bit less defensively than Brazil. And I think defense is Brazil's issue too. There could be some goals in this one. Lucas Paquetá is out with a hamstring injury. Carlo Ancelotti has been a little cagey about how he will adjust. Brazil has been eliminated in each of their last 6 World Cup knockout matches against European opposition. And you have to be concerned about that when you're playing a team that's got Erling Haaland up top. He has scored in 13 straight competitive internationals. He would be the first European since Christian Vieri in 1998 for Italy to score in each of his first 4 World Cup matches. Martin Odegaard, he is 1 assist away from a similar all-time record. The coach, Ståle Solbakken, he was blunt. He said it would be a surprise if we win, talking about Norway, but he said that they would play their game. Ancelotti, he joked and tried to keep things light. He did confirm that a Neymar and Vinicius pairing could happen at some point. Maybe tomorrow if needed. Kind of seemed like that wasn't his plan, though, going in. Then we start to get to Monday, and Portugal and Spain, the first match. I think in all the stars of this tournament, the one who is being talked about the least is Mikel Oyarzabal from Spain. He doesn't play for one of the big clubs in Spain. Even in Spain, I don't think he's talked about enough. He could be the key for the Spanish team. That, look, Lamine Yamal is going to get a ton of attention. Pedri, Rodri, Dani Olmo, they're going to get a ton of attention, and that's going to help Oyarzabal kind of fly under the radar. That's a good thing for Spain. He's a problem. I really like his movement. I really think he's a very technical player. I like what he brings to the table. I think Spain gets through Portugal. I don't think it's going to be simple, but I don't think Portugal has played their best soccer in this tournament. And I think Spain is starting to find their best soccer in this tournament. I thought we saw that in the last round. USA Belgium on Monday night. Man, it's a rematch of 2014. It's a rematch of the friendly from here in Atlanta back in March. Remember the game in 2014 is where Tim Howard had 16 saves in 120 minutes. This could be the last World Cup for a group that we thought back in 2014 was going to potentially win a World Cup. Kevin De Bruyne, Romelu Lukaku, Thibaut Courtois. They haven't done really anything that we thought that Belgium would do with that group. Now you've got Jeremy Doku. He's the danger man for this team. Belgium has regressed from March. The U.S. has progressed from March. I think now you're getting a game that is much more even on paper coming in. And then you add the home field advantage in Seattle for the U.S. Now you are missing Folair and Balogun. He's suspended. That's been confirmed. U.S. soccer legend Tab Ramos, who we talked about from that injury in the 1994 game with Brazil on July 4th, he gave an interview to Soccer America, and he expects Ricardo Pepi to be the one who replaces Balogun up top, talked about his connection with Christian Pulisic, which is a very good point. I wonder if you look at potentially Haji Wright, even though he hasn't played as much, because Pepe's been so good as a sub and kind of being the second guy in this forward line. Can Haji Wright be the second guy if needed? Because you do have to think about potentially going 120 minutes. I personally kind of like the idea of Wright starting and then Pepe coming in the 60th minute or even earlier if needed. If you need to make that sub at halftime, you make that sub at halftime. But if you go the other way, I get it. Either way is fine. I think you have to pick one or the other and not move Pulisic up top. I don't want to see you lose the connections and the chemistry that you've built with the rest of the group. I really agree with what Bob Bradley has said about that. Tab Ramos also gave you a really good line talking about this midfield with Tyler Adams, Malik Tillman, Weston McKennie. He said it's like putting a Ferrari engine in your car. You get to the traffic light, you're not worried about the guy next to you revving their engine. You've got three guys in Adams, Tillman, and McKennie who have a ridiculous engine. First off, all of them can go for a long time. They're all relentless defensively. They're all relentless getting forward. And I think we've seen from Tillman maybe a little bit more, and this is before the free kick goal. You're seeing more from him on the attacking side of the ball. McKennie's been one of the best midfielders in the tournament, period. As good as that Spain midfield is that I mentioned with Rodri and Pedri and Dani Olmo, Weston McKennie has played at that level in this entire tournament. He's been one of the best midfielders from any team. Tyler Adams has been outstanding. This is the, and yeah, it keeps happening because the team keeps advancing. This is the biggest night in U.S. soccer history on Monday night. Monday Night Football from Seattle. It's going to be special. We will be live from Park Tavern. Dukes and Bell will get it started from 2 to 6. I'll take over at 6 o'clock. We'll take you up to kickoff. You can watch the match with us at Park Tavern. Great spot to hang out and watch the U.S. and Belgium in the round of 16. And then on Tuesday, we have Argentina and Egypt here in Atlanta at noon. Man, that turnaround is going to be really rough for me. You guys know that I am obviously a huge U.S. fan. Obviously a huge Argentina fan because that was the first team that I had a chance to see. Basically them playing back-to-back at 8 o'clock in the evening and then noon the next day with me doing a pregame show and then popping up on the morning shift from 6 to 7 a.m. on Tuesday and then going further into the city to get ready for this. Argentina fans are going to be everywhere. Tuesday night show will be a bit of an adventure. Hopefully there will be a nap for me somewhere in the midst of all of that after that game. Or I might just be crazy by that point. Because then later in the day on Tuesday, you got Colombia and Switzerland in Vancouver, which is going to be an interesting game. Colombia is a team you got to watch in this tournament. John Autreus with the winner last night against Ghana. This is a legit team in Colombia. And you had a really some really cool moments in this game. They get the clean sheet. I think you see how good Colombia can be. And they're another one that I think is building the deeper they get into the tournament. So as good as the tournament has been, the next 3 days are Brazil and Norway, two of the best attackers in the world in Vinicius and Erling Haaland. Mexico and England at the Estadio Azteca, the spectacle of spectacles in this tournament. Portugal and Spain on Monday afternoon, neighbors. They don't like each other at all. USA Belgium that night, I think, can also be a spectacle of spectacles for another host nation with an opportunity to go to a quarterfinal. Then Tuesday, we get Argentina, the defending champs, here in Atlanta against Egypt. Mo Salah trying to take Egypt to places they have never been. And then Colombia continues to try to build and fly under the radar and potentially set up a quarterfinal with either Argentina or Egypt. The next six games in the round of 16 are going to test all of us. They are going to test all of these favorites. It is going to be a ride. We'll be here on AST to tell you about all of it. But we have one more segment tonight. It's the 3-4-3. We'll have three standout players from the day, four headlines, and three things that have made me smile at the World Cup. Coming up next on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
And now we end the night with a bit of structure.
Shot.
Let's get the formation set. It's the 3-4-3 on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Final segment of AST on Saturday, July 4th. I think all the fireworks just went off over on the east side of town. Sounded like all of them hit just at once outside the window. Very cool. Hopefully you've had a great day. The soccer, I thought, was really, really interesting, with Morocco showing their quality in the second half, France finding a way to win against a very difficult Paraguay team. Let's talk about three standout players from today, four headlines, and three things that make me smile. It's the 3-4-3. It's brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Number one on the standouts, Azzedine Onahi from Morocco. Two goals in the quarterfinal, clinching win to get them to the quarterfinal, round of 16 here. The cool thing about Onahi is just he's one of these guys that, for whatever reason, it hasn't always clicked for them at the club level. And when he puts that national team jersey on, he becomes a different player. And if there is a concern about Saibari, who had to leave the match in the first half, Onahi becomes so important for Morocco against France. Number two on the standouts, Désiré Doué, a player that I think would start for almost any other team in the tournament. But with France, you've got Olise, Mbappe, and Dembélé in that front three. So, I mean, come on. Barcola playing as well. It's like, where can Doué play? So he comes off the bench. He comes in a game that is scoreless, and he nearly wins a free kick outside the 18 and then wins a penalty in the first couple minutes of him being on. And that ultimately decides the match. Second French substitute to ever come into a match and earn a penalty that decides the match. Big play from Désiré Doué. And when you go back and you look at that France win, they did not create a lot from the run of play. Less than one expected goal from the run of play. For them to be able to get through says a lot, again, about who they are and how gritty they can be. I mean, Kylian Mbappe said they can win ugly. They did. They're going to have to do that again, probably, to win this World Cup, like a lot of people think that they will. And number three on the standouts, the player of the game from that match, Orlando Gil, the goalkeeper for Paraguay. Two more big saves late in that one. Very classy post-game interview afterwards. He did not throw much shade at Kylian Mbappe, who threw a lot of shade at him after the final whistle, wouldn't shake his hand, was celebrating instead, and Gil just got on with it. He said, "I think we can leave with our heads held high. I believe we could have gone much further had it not been for the penalty." He's like, "As for the penalty decision, I think it was the right one." And looking at the replay, yeah, It that should be called. It wasn't called live. You cannot call it. It is a judgment call. I think it was the right decision, and ultimately that's what decides the match. All right, let's get into the headlines, four of them. Number one, Philipp Lahm, the legendary German fullback / midfielder, ripped into Julian Nagelsmann after Germany's exit. So Germany lost to this Paraguay team in the round of 32 in penalties. Lahm, former captain of the German national team, he said that Germany has lost its own footballing identity under Nagelsmann, who has since resigned. Jurgen Klopp, he is reportedly the front runner to replace him. He brings a different style. Nagelsmann is maybe Klopp 2.0, if you want to go there. But I think Nagelsmann has, I think maybe his identity himself and what the way he believes in the game has kind of gotten a little twisted. I'd like to see Julian Nagelsmann go back to the club level and redefine who he is. We saw so much good from him to get this far as a young manager. It didn't really work with Germany. He's a very good manager. I want to see him go back to the club level and get back into the nuts and bolts of who he is. Klopp is part of Germany's footballing identity, not the only one. He is one direction of it, but he has always been very clear in knowing who he is and how his teams play. And that has evolved over time. You go back and look at the Liverpool teams when he first showed up versus when he left, and they played very differently. They went from being a team that didn't want the ball to a team that could absolutely play with the ball and be dangerous. You're going to need to have that if he goes to Germany. All right, number two, Jesse Marsch saying that Canada was the better team in a 3-0 loss and saying that he'd rather be on the Canada side than the Morocco side. He'd rather be us than them, which is crazy in the sense that one team is moving on to a quarterfinal and one team is going home. Jesse Marsch is too good of a manager for all this other stuff to be what we're talking about. And we're not just making up things to talk about. He's saying them, you know, like he's bringing this on himself and he needs to stop because he, again, did a good job with Canada in this tournament. I gave Gustavo Alfaro a ton of credit for getting Paraguay as far as they did with less talent. Canada has less talent than Paraguay. Canada now has more of their talent on the attacking side than the defensive side. It's like a flipped kind of team. But overall, I think Canada has less talent. For Jesse Marsch to get them to this point, you have to give him credit. He's built a program basically from scratch. I know they were at the last World Cup, but John Herdman kind of left the program in a very bad spot. And Jesse Marsch has come in and done well. He got to a semifinal in the Copa America in 2024, and he gets to the round of 16 of the World Cup. Good. Just stop talking, man. Please stop saying crazy things and stop talking about the U.S. program and just focus on the work. He's got an extension. He will be in Canada through the next World Cup if things continue to go well. All right, number three on the headlines, Jarrell Kwanzaa is fit again for England. He did not play in the round of 32 match against DR Congo here in Atlanta. Reece James is still doubtful, but Kwanzaa is fit. That helps you a lot at right back, which I think is going to be a very important position against Mexico. Mexico, Julian Quiñones has been so good coming off of that left side. Not really a winger, but he will come in from that left side. You look at Mexico and how they lined up against Ecuador in the last match. Quiñones was a little more of a winger there. They've also had Alvarado, who has moved from right to left. You've got Romo, you've got Lira, you've got Mora in the midfield. I think Mexico will attack whoever's at right back. I really do. I think the strength of Mexico's team with Gallardo as well coming up from left back is on the left. They are going to attack England's right. Kwanzaa is a better option than Jed Spence. How much better and how fit is he? That's going to be a question mark. If he's not, does Declan Rice move to right back like we saw in the second half against DR Congo? And number four on the headlines, just a little more fallout from last night's Argentina-Cabo Verde match. This kind of doubles up over into a bonus thing that's made me smile as of late. Seeing all the videos and comments from everybody after that game praising Cabo Verde and the fans interacting, Argentine fans celebrating Cabo Verde fans, and I'm sure the parties in Miami were off the chain last night, but also hearing Lionel Scaloni and Lionel Messi and other players just give so much props to Cabo Verde for their performance, not just in the tournament, but in that game last night. I mean, Dibu Martinez, the goalkeeper for Argentina, his reaction to the second goal when he was asked about it by a reporter. I can't repeat it because it's a phrase that you've got to be kidding me would be maybe the closest way to describe it without getting an FCC violation. He said it in Spanish and he's right. I mean, that goal was ridiculous. It was one of the great World Cup matches and it absolutely puts Cabo Verde on the map. And I think it also shows that just like France, Argentina can win ugly if they have to. If it's not going their way, they found a way to do it. All right. Three things that make me smile. That was your bonus. Three things. Number one, last night in the Colombia match, it was very cool to see Jose Pekerman, the former Colombian national team coach who took them very far. Great manager from Argentina originally. He was able to be working that game for Telemundo and before the game ran into one of his proteges, Nestor Lorenzo, who's the manager of Colombia, and a very strong embrace. It was very cool to see. Huge win for Colombia, one of their biggest in recent years, you know, really since the semifinal against Uruguay in the Copa America in 2024 to get to that final. Very cool to see Pekerman and Lorenzo have that moment. Number two, even with Jesse Marsh talking a lot and saying some unserious things, what he's doing for soccer in Canada is very cool. And a Canadian reporter thanked Jesse Marsh at the end of the press conference, just simply for the run that the team made and just for allowing the country to believe in the game and believe in this team. The prime minister posted his own pride on social media afterward. I want to see where soccer goes in Canada from here. There's a lot of talk. I had an article in, a news blurb in Morning Espresso this morning about the business side of Canadian soccer, realizing that, hey, now there's an opportunity here. We have a national team that is consistently doing things. We have now the Canadian Premier League. You have more kids who are excited about playing soccer. The game's growing fast in Canada, and Jesse Marsh deserves credit for being part of that. It's a very cool thing to have Canada be a strong team in CONCACAF. It helps make the U.S. better. It helps make Mexico better. It helps make the region as a whole better. It's a good thing. Number three on things that make me smile, Tab Ramos talked about the interview he gave with Soccer America and talking about the midfield and the Ferrari engine. He also talked about the 48-team tournament, and he said that he was like a lot of people. He was skeptical of the expanded format, but he said that stories like what we saw from Cabo Verde have completely won him over. Watching the packed stadiums for every single match, I mean, almost every game has been completely full in this tournament. We've never seen anything like this. And I still see some people trying to do this thing about, well, if you look at this one section, there's an empty row. Stop. Just stop. If you work in the game and you're doing that, I have to ask you why. If you're trying to find something to not enjoy about this tournament, I have to ask you why. It has been a blast. The format has worked. Yeah, I wish tickets were cheaper. People are ending up in these stands, though. I would like to see them cheaper. I would like to see more cheap options, maybe a larger allotment of tickets that are reasonably priced so you can get more kids in the building. But this is a conversation that the NFL and the NBA and Major League Baseball need to have as well about their events and music artists and theater shows and everything. Tickets are expensive these days. The World Cup's no different. It comes around once every 4 years. This one has lived up to every single bit of the hype. And it's about to turn a whole nother corner. Round of 16 tomorrow. Brazil, Norway, the Vikings against the Samba Boys. Jogo Benito against Viking soccer and Erling Haaland. And then Mexico and England at the Estadio Azteca, which will be an unbelievable Sunday night. I'm back with you from 9 to 11 tomorrow. Yes, that's going to overlap with some of Mexico and England. So if you want to, I don't know, turn down the game and listen to me go crazy, it's just an option for you. I'll be on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. 9 to 11 tomorrow night for the rest of your July 4th. Have a great one. Adios, everybody.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team. But not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanzus and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.